Right, Arthur.
Any medical history things you want to ask
yes.
me,
Yes. Yes, I really want to understand what you, how you're involved in the Secret Listeners. But before I begin that, just a few things about you. Were you born in Coventry?
No, I was actually born in Staffordshire.
You were?
But I lived in Coventry right from about 2 years old, you know. I mean, you could say old, so I was born in Coventry, you know.
Okay, so how do you become interested in radio? What was the sort of stimulus for it?
Well, it's actually really strange, because I was about 15, 16 or what, and I used to play cricket on a piece of ground in Stoke Aldermore. And one of my friends, one day it started pouring with rain, and he said, come on to my house, he said, we won't get wet there. So he dashed off to his house, and he went in, and I went in with him actually, and he said, come on and look at the radio, he said, I've just built a radio, he said. So I went upstairs and I listened on it, and he said, I said, well, I can't hear any music or anything like that. And he said, no, he said, it's a shortwave radio, he said, and you can pick up long distance stations. And I thought, well, this is very interesting. And anyway, he tuned in and he managed to get one of the American stations, I think it was Schenectady.
Oh yes, in New York State, yes.
New York State, that's right, yeah. And I listened to this program for a little while, and I thought, this is absolutely fascinating. I said, can I build one of these? And he said, well, what you have to do, you have to get the parts, he said. And he said, and I'll show you how to wire them up, you see. So we went off, and we went to a place, actually, in Stony Stanton Road, near to the Swanswell.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a second-hand shop, and they got radios in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd also got radio parts, like great big capacitors with moving reins and all that. And he said, these are the kind of things you want, he said. And what we do, he said, you must have the ones that have got the little bolts and screws on. Because he said, what you do then, you can take them to pieces, and you can also take some of the moving plates out,
yeah.
and alter the capacity so that it's so low, it will tune short waves, you see. So I thought, well, I don't know much about it, you'll have to tell me this. Tell me a bit about it. So he said, well, I'll give you a circuit and I'll show you. And it all started from there. That's how my interest started in radio.
So what directed you to amateur radio then, getting a license?
Well, it was because we used to listen on the shortwaves, you see, and then we found out, one day, I came across some chaps talking, and they were talking about Coventry, and I realised that they were actually in, this station was in Coventry, and so I got hold of my friend, and he said, I was listening to these people talking, and he said, oh yes, that's the radio amateurs, he said, I think they're talking about having a club in Coventry. So, having a get together. So, anyway, he and I went along, and we found out where this club was going to be, where that was going to start.
Mm.
And that's how it all started. We went along to this meeting. The initial meetings were held actually at a cafe down in the Burgess. Oh. Was it Burgess? No, Hartford Street.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. One of the classes down in Hertfordshire.
So did you have to pass an examination to get a licence like you do today? Or?
Oh yeah. Well, actually what it was, you couldn't have an amateur radio. Found out this afterwards because we started going to, they formed a club, which was called the Coventry Shortwave Radio Club.
Mm.
And then gradually we came to be known as the Coventry Amateur Radio Society. But, well, I said, well, how do you go about getting a license? And we met one or two of the amateurs there by going along to this meeting. And they were all seemed to be, well, they were all about anything between 5 and 10 years older than myself, you know. But I was old enough to understand what they were on about. And they had to apply for a license. But they said, first of all, you have to do what they call a probationary period. You have to have a license for 12 months, and you're allowed to build a transmitter, but you're not allowed to put it on the air. You must put it onto a dummy load, you see. And then at the end of the period, as you come up to the end of your 12 months, you can write and say, I'm ready now to accept my full licence. And they will send someone out, that used to be called an RI, a radio inspector. And he would come out and he'd have a look at the equipment that you'd built and decide whether he thought it was satisfactory for going on the air. You're not going to cause interference, you know. Even in those days, I mean, there was interference, you know. I mean, people were, I mean, radios weren't like they are now. They didn't have to go through all the stringent
tests.
Things, like, you know. And I applied. And how old would I be now? I think I was over 20 then when I applied. And they gave me this, they allowed me to have the transmitter, to build a transmitter. But my call sign was to be 2FTK. And it was only 2FTK, I wasn't allowed to put a G in. Just 2FTK. And I found out that one or two of the others in the radio club had joined. They were also 2BRJ and 2FNT and things like that, you know. And then anyway, my 12 months came up and I applied for the licence, but I never got it because just then war was declared.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so you hadn't really got a full transmitted licence by the time the Second World War broke out.
No.
Now, I believe then that all transmitting equipment was confiscated.
That's right, all transmitting equipment.
Transmitting equipment, but
yes.
Not receiving.
Yes. They took away the... they took away the transmitter that I've built, which I haven't got now, unfortunately. I'd like to have had it. But, they also took away the receiver that I'd got.
Mm-hmm.
But I did get that back again because, I'll tell you about it afterwards, about the fellows who came to see me. When I was a shortwave listener, during the period that I applied for my licence, I needed to go. I can't just remember exactly whether it was right or not, but I believe the first 12 months you were supposed to do on CW only.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't allowed telephony license. I can't remember whether that was right or not, because, as I say, my mind's going...
Well, of course, it's a long time.
About memory's going
it's a long time ago, isn't it? So sort of by the time you were ready for your license, the war had broken out, and that was the end of that.
That was it, yeah. But during my shortwave listening era, as I should say, I decided... Well, actually, we were talking to one or two of the other radio amateurs, and they said, you realise, as you're just a shortwave listener, you should really learn your Morse. They said, you'd be surprised. You'll get twice the interest as well out of it, because you'll be able to decipher the call signs, not only of the telephony stations, but the CW stations as well.
Okay then, so...
So we set you to learn the Morse code. That's how I learned the Morse code.
Right. So we got to the stage now where war has broken out in September 1939.
Yeah, I could read CW.
You could read CW, yeah. But you hadn't got a full licence because...
That's right.
Because it was suspended. It wasn't true of all countries though, was it? I believe the Americans were allowed to keep transmit.
Probably, I think they probably were.
So let's get round to the sort of crux really of
I don't really know whether they were or not. They might have been.
The crux of this interview, and this is being a secret listener.
Yeah.
So what happened there then? You.
How did I come to be like that? You might think to yourself, well, he was of the age where he should have been called up. But I was working for a company called Root Security. They had a shadow factory in Stoke Aldermore. And I went to work there because I was living almost opposite it. And we were one of the first houses in Stoke Aldermore. And because it was nice and convenient, decided to go and see if I could get a job there. So, and I did. I got a job there. They were setting on labour. And when I was there and the war was declared, they were instantly put on full operation. They were making engines for the Bristol Aeroplane Company, Pegasus aircraft engines, and we said it was making Pegasus engines. And I went, it's gone now, with him coming up at
me. You were involved, so you became an apprentice, did you?
Yeah.
A toolmaker, something like that?
Yes.
You became an apprentice toolmaker?
Yeah.
Which was sort of one of those things to get into, wasn't
that's
it?
That's right, yeah.
It was sort of a bit of an elite in the engineering industry, I think, toolmakers.
That's right, yeah.
Were. Okay, so how did this business with the secret, you become a secret listener? Did someone knock on the door one day?
Well,
say,
one day I was approached, there was two radio amateurs at the door. I knew one of them, but didn't know the other one. And I was introduced, and it turned out that this fella they'd been given this job to go round, and if they knew anyone who was interested in amateur radio, and particularly because they always considered that we radio amateurs were actually how can I say? We were already geared up to do the job.
Yes, you've got the...
Yeah. And so they came to me and they said, can you read Morse code? And I said, yeah. Oh, they, first of all, they came and they said, I understand you're in the Coventry Amateur Radio Society. And I said, yes, that's right. And they said, what we want to do, we're trying to get people to come. And how would you like to do a job listening for the government? It's interesting, you'll be just doing just exactly what you did before, and your knowledge of CW and operating, you'll be able to pick out the professional operators from the amateur operators and anyone who's likely to be sending messages back to Germany, or you know, anyone who's actually against the Great Britain, like, you know. And so I said, yeah, fine, I'd love that. So that's how I came to do it. They approached me, and I said, well, by the way, what equipment have you got? And I said, well, I said, I've only got the one I've got up there. I said, because I said, I'm only a young person, I haven't got the money to buy communication receivers. And they said, well, we'll see what we can do for you. And anyway, I signed the form and said I would do it. I ought to sign, by the way, I signed the secret act as well.
Yeah.
And they went away, and about 2 weeks later, they came back and presented me with a brand new Sky Champion.
Right, so that, what was that? That was a sort of thing of your dreams, was it?
That's the kind of thing I would have liked. Like, if I could have afforded it.
So they gave you what was effectively a professional receiver.
Yeah.
So what did they do then? Did they ask you to listen on specific frequencies?
Yes. I got to know they were working to the receiver, obviously. And then they said, what we will do, we will get in touch with you, and we'll ask you to listen on certain frequencies for certain stations. And we'll give you log sheets.
So you were asked to fill them in, were you?
That's right,
and,
yes. Listen for these stations.
Did you have to take the Morse code down and send them, like I've seen at Bletchley Park where people were taking the messages down, did you
that's
have
right,
to do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah.
So you had to copy as much as you could down?
Yeah, so I had to get, they told me a frequency to listen to, and in the first instance, and I would listen on that frequency, and listen if a specific station came up. Then they told me to listen on this specific station, and if not, if it didn't come up within so long, I'd to go around and do some general search.
Okay.
And the general search would be covering in it, a certain frequency range,
right.
And it would cover so long as well, like, you know.
So, obviously you were working and quite long hours in the time.
So
when did you do the listening then, at night or did you come home at lunchtime?
Yeah, or sometimes in the daytime at weekend.
Uh-huh.
But mind you, eventually in the end I had to work weekends as well. But
So when did this start then? Was this 1939 or 1940?
No, this was about 1940.
What yeah. was that? It's just going back to 1940 because it is a memorable year for people that lived in Coventry, the November Blitz.
Yeah.
Have you recollections of that?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people don't like to talk about it. My mother doesn't. But you remember the devastation.
Yeah,
the
I remember all that. Terrible.
Oh, we won't push it any further. But
So
in 1940 then, you were listening on certain, you were given instructions what frequencies to listen to and who to listen for, so you could identify them, what, by call sign, or was it by key action, or?
Well, actually, they told us we were going to have these log shoots and that. And they told us that we would actually be listening on these certain frequencies, and we would be expected to do any logging, to fill them in and send them to a box number. But before this happened, we had an inaugural meeting in Birmingham, and we held this in the Imperial Hotel. And I went along to this meeting, and it was a fellow in who lived in G5, but anyway, he lived near Canada, and he was actually talked to us about and told us what they wanted, and he explained to him what these operators were. They were operating from countries in some of them were operating in this country, some of them were maybe on the low countries, like
in the occupied countries.
That's right. Yeah.
So they were on the lookout for maybe spies that were in this country,
that's
and maybe
right,
they were
yeah.
on the lookout
yeah.
for people in the resistance.
Yeah. Oh
that were transmitting.
Well,
back.
You see, at that time, they had reports from official receiving stations that, you know, I mean. In those days, they had the RI and they kept a watch on the radio spectrum to see what stations were there and not, like, you know.
So you sort of faithfully copied down the messages and you got no idea who they were.
So they told us what they were. Now, let me give you the experience first. The first one that I ever received was actually one they asked me to listen for, and sure enough I found it. But the only trouble was that the Sky Champion had no real official, how can I say that, no real frequency markings on it.
Oh, I see.
And you couldn't guarantee you were definitely listening on the right frequency.
Oh.
So I held the Sky Champion for a little while, and then one day, a fellow named Brian Warren, the G5 that lived at Kenilworth on the hill, as you're going up into Kenilworth there. Mm. And he came to me and he said, we're going to see if we can get you a different receiver. He said, how would you like an HRO? I said, I'd definitely like an HRO.
Rolls Royce of its day, wasn't it?
So anyway, they duly arrived with this HRO, but it wasn't a new, brand new one. And it was a valve one, not one of the latest HRO5. But I had this HRO anyway, and it told you, we had frequency list, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Plug-in coils at the front.
Yeah, yeah.
The frequency list, you know. And so I was able to find by the reading what the exact frequency was. But straight away, as soon as I went on to these, and listened, I heard the first station that was asked me to listen to. Well, he kept giving his call sign out first, just the same call sign, three-letter call sign it was. We'll say, for example, SPG.
Mm-hmm.
SPG. And you could tell, really, that he wasn't really an experienced operator. And I suppose, fortunately for me, being he wasn't very experienced, he also didn't send very fast, which helped me a lot.
Yeah.
Because it was the first time I heard one. And he said, sending this SPG, And then all of a sudden he came on, and instead of doing that, he started and he gave me a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then a preamble it was.
Yeah.
And the, there was a time, there was the date of the message, the urgency of the message. Oh, the urgency came at the end. If the message ended in Z at the end, it was red hot urgent.
Oh, I see.
But if it was X or something like that, it wasn't too, you know, it could break till tomorrow kind of business, you know.
But this was in code, it wasn't in plain language.
No, this was all in code, this was.
Right, okay.
And they'd start off and they'd send you five letter groups.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they'd go through, and I was able to copy them all right, going through, only hoping that there wasn't any interference come on, something like that. Next door neighbour switching the radio on or something.
Yep.
And we went right through, and then there's one little bit which I missed. I don't know why I missed it, the car outside I think. But I went through, and when it came to the end, I'd copied it all out, and I realised at the same when they put, we say 36 was one of the numbers before the said, the 36 was actually the amount of five-letter groups.
Oh, I see.
And I realised that by the end, that when we got to the 36, I was expecting them, and we finished the transmission we did, and so I waited, and I waited, and anyway, I thought, blow it, I've missed that now. And anyway, he came up again. And the station that he'd actually been listening to and contacting and working, he must have missed the same as I did.
Uh-huh.
And he asked for a repeat of his group, you see. So I was able to fit it in.
So how many, have you got any recollection, how many different stations you were listening for? Was it dozens, or was it just a handful, as they say?
Yeah, we came eventually in the end, we had something like about, I'd have a communication from you in the form of a letter, which was sent to me in an ordinary plain envelope, you wouldn't know if it was anything important or anything like that. And they started off, and they told me how many, what stations to listen for, and on which particular date, and they asked me to put in as much time as I possibly could. If it was possible to listen every night, it would help, but to not to do any more than 2 hours at one stretch, because people get tired over that time, and they didn't want people to make mistakes,
So, you were listening really. What frequencies are we talking about, Arthur?
About most of the frequencies were around about anything from 35 to 50 metres or something like that. Yeah. And some of the stations had T9 notes. I don't really say they were T9X notes, but T9 notes.
And some were ropey.
Some of them were a little bit quirky.
Yes, probably.
And you could pick them up. And quite often you'd hear one, and you'd think to yourself, I know damn well that's one of them, like, you know. And
but you can copy it, Miss Irene.
Yeah.
Working Russian novices in the same. But I was probably running on accumulators that were going
there. Yeah, and if there was anything I was a little bit worried about, well, supposing I received one of them, and I thought, this sounds like one, if I put it in on my general listening, and put on general listening, and put down the frequency in this station, and copied it, and he started sending groups all the better. And on more than one occasion, I did that, and I received a letter back asking me to listen to the station again, because it was one they didn't know about. Which I thought that was useful.
So you got some feedback then, you just didn't just think...
Oh, you got cheap feedback all the while. Yeah. And as I say, about once every two months, about two to three months, I think, from what I can remember. It's difficult to remember now.
Well, I'm sure it is.
once every 2 months, this Brian Warren would call a meeting at Birmingham. We always used to go to the Imperial Hotel, and on this one occasion, Lord Sandhurst turned up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was over communications, and he gave us a pep talk, you know, and told us how important the work was we were doing, and how well they were doing, and that the message that we were receiving. And then he made the point of saying that due to one of us taking a message like that, and someone at the same time taking a message on a different frequency, they were able to couple up A and B,
right.
Which they didn't know, because at the particular time they didn't know the station they were sending, they didn't know who was sending it to, you see.
Okay, so you started this in 1940. How long did it go on for?
Well, it went on right to the end
of the war.
1945.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes an interest. If we could perhaps shoot forward from 1940 to the year I was born, 1944.
Yeah.
What about around D-Day? Was there a lot of traffic that you heard? Was it more than you'd heard in 1940? Or didn't that stand out as a...
I don't think so anymore, really. I think, if anything, most of these stations that we were picking up, I think, were in the low countries, in France and places like that.
Oh, yes.
More than in our own country.
Yeah.
I doubt if there were very many in our own country. And, we did hear tales, we were told, I mean, at that time you'd hear tales when the war was on, you don't know which was really truthful and that, but we were told that the authorities had, the army had picked up several people who were doing illicit transmission in this country and all this, but actually in some ways, we were also told that although they knew that people were operating in this country, they allowed them to carry on operating so that they could find out if they were operating, find out who their friends were.
Oh, yes.
You see? You know what I mean?
Well, yes, I think a lot of them turned out to be double agents, didn't
they? That's right, yeah.
So you went on really right until
1945.
So at the end of the European War.
And then when the European War finished, we were asked to try listening to if we heard anything that we thought might be a bit suspect in countries over in the Far East and that.
Uh-huh.
But the Americans were mostly engaged in this kind of thing, because most of the conflict was taking place, as you know yourself, in the South Pacific and that.
Yeah.
So we more or less packed up, you know. We went to one or two meetings, nothing really, going to one. And it was held in the police station
Coventry or Birmingham?
No, this was in Coventry. It was in Earlston. It was a police station, Arden Street.
Oh, really?
Arden Street Police Station. And we went along, the war had finished, and we went along, we had this meeting, and Brian Warren was there, and we thanked everybody, and we said, what about the equipment, and all that. And they said, well, at the moment, hang on to it, because we haven't disbanded properly, but there's not much reason now for you to listen any longer. We consider that everything is status quo now.
So did you keep that equipment?
Well, I have an HRO receiver, so I kept this. And right up to 1949, I think it was. Anyway, it went about 4 years after the war. I'd still got it. And then one day, I was told that equipment had all been sorted out. Because you understand that the amount of equipment that was left after the war.
Yeah.
All the taps had been sorted out, you see. They were all, you see. And we were told by Brown Warren that we could actually purchase it. But we'd have to make a, payment. A nominal payment.
Nominal payment, yeah.
£10.
Oh, for an HRO, that would have been.
So I said, right, I haven't got a receiver anyway. I'd applied for my amateur radio licence. And I'd already, by the way, I paid for the amateur radio license. I was already using the HRO for my amateur radio.
Well, of course.
So I thought, well, I've got to buy this because I haven't got another one.
So when did you get your transmitter back?
So, well, I had the transmitter come back, but it was, how can I say, things had moved on considerably then. Like, I mean, mine was a breadboard transmitter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean by that?
Oh, yes, I certainly do, Arthur.
Yeah.
So when was amateur radio reinstated in the UK?
About 1947, I think it was. 46, 47, 46, I'm sorry. But,
So, let's just to wind up, I don't want to take too much of your time. Did you really realise what you were doing? Were you aware of what your role was? Did they explain it to you, that you were listening for?
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, you knew what we were doing. Yeah. I mean, we were told who these people are, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, these people are, they're like, what was the French name for the fascists?
Oh, gosh.
Remember?
For who, sorry?
The fascists. In
gosh, they were...
Quisling.
No, that was Norway.
No.
They were under Petain, weren't they? Marshal Petain.
That's right,
Petain.
Yeah.
Fine, so...
A lot of these people, that's who they were.
So really you played a small but key role in communications in the Second World War.
Oh, yeah, we did a lot of that, yeah. I mean, there were commercials. I mean, there were really people, I mean, people like the Royal Signal and that. Mm. I mean, they had operators listening for them and that, like, you know.
But I guess they were short of
people. What frequencies they listened on and what frequencies they worked on, I don't know.
Well, I'd imagine they'd be the military, they'd be listening to military
stations.
So, in a way, Arthur, you were one of a unique band of people, and showing what radio amateurs can really do when it comes to the crunch. You've got
you've got
the experience.
Yeah.
The ability.
That's how I was fortunate. I don't know. I was fortunate in some ways in the fact that I didn't have to go in the forces. Mm. I spent many hours on the air doing what I thought was a useful job, which was. At the same time, it was doing something that I enjoyed doing, also listening to. Had I gone through the war all right, been in the services and that, I'd have probably had to start learning more all over again. But it kept me going, like, you know what I mean.
Well, also, I think probably if you were a relatively young person then, but there would have been a lot of older people, wouldn't there? Perhaps people, even of your age now, that were playing their part, people that perhaps weren't suitable for going in the forces.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, there must have been thousands and thousands of you across the country.
But I was one of... I found out that three or four of my friends were also in with me.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't the only one in Coventry that was asked this. I mean, as I say, there was G5, there was Brian Warren, there's G5, I can't remember his call sign. There was Bert Chater, No, Bert Chater was in the services. Bob Palmer, G5PT.
Yeah, I've heard of him. I've never met him.
G6TD was in it. His friend.
I think
Jack Tuck.
Yes, I remember Jack Tuck.
Yeah, G6TD.
Now it's difficult to remember call signs. I'd have a job for my first work.
I'm not sure whether Cyril Taylor or not. Team Z2, I don't know. I can't remember that. But where's that? Oh dear, I forget his name now. There's about four of us anyway in Coventry.
Okay, there was. Did you meet and talk to each other about what you were doing, or did you?
Oh yeah.
So you were able.
One gets old.
Yeah.
But we never told anybody else.
No.
I mean, it became a bit embarrassing when after I got married and I was living in Charles Moore, as I say, and I was. You're trying really now,
Chris. No.
Oh.
I think you said to me that the people sort of resented you because you were missing out on the fire.
That's right. I was married. We were living up Stoke Aldermore. Mm. Aldermore Lane. And I was working at the
route
security. Mm. And anyway, the fire watcher came around and wanted to know why I wasn't doing any fire watching and we'd go and join them. And I said, well, I am doing another job, actually. I said, but I can't tell you much about it. But if you get in touch with this person, if you ring them up, they'll confirm what I'm saying. So anyway, he was a very sensible person. Mm-hmm. Actually, he became a friend of mine later on. He never once asked me what I was doing, which I thought was very good. And I got to know him quite well because he was a neighbour.
Mm-hmm.
But, as I say, whatever he did, he must have told the others, I've been to see him and he's doing something else, you know. But I've got to wait until he's all right like that, you know.
Well, okay, Arthur, I think that's most interesting to hear your recollections of what's nearly getting on for 70 years ago, isn't it, almost?
Oh, yes. It's hard to remember, Bob.
I'm sure it is, but I think if it's not recorded in some way, it'll be forgotten about. And I think that there were people did things in their own way. And you listened to probably people that were putting their lives at risk.
That's right, exactly.
In the resistance.
Yeah.
Okay, Arthur, well, let's leave it at that then. I think you've had enough.